What if a nursing college cared for its students the same way nurses cared for their patients? What if the focus was on keeping students in, not weeding them out? What would happen? Something extraordinary. Join us, and together we can make a difference. Chamberlain University College of Nursing. Extraordinary care, extraordinary nurses.
Attend an open house at Chamberlain's Dallas-Fort Worth campus in Irving, July 27th at 4 p.m. For gainful employment information, visit chamberlain.edu/GEBSN.
Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos, you know, last week was a really busy week for me. I started the week in Michigan visiting Gull Lake View Resort. They have six golf courses up there and just recently opened a new design by, not by Tom Doak himself, but by Tom Doak's design team called Stoughton Bray, which translated from the Irish means it's Grand Hill, and it sits way up on a high hill overlooking Battle Creek, Michigan. It's just a real joy to play. And then later in the week, I rushed home so that I could catch the Marathon Classic for a couple days on the weekend, and I was able to chat with a couple of the players, and we're going to hear those interviews a little bit later in the show. But first, Carlos, Jordan Spieth tried to give the Open Championship away, but rallied to get his third major win. I.K. Kim picked up her second LPGA Tour win this year, and the old guys play the final major of the year, this year, British Open at Porthcawl in Wales. We got a lot of golf to talk about tonight, Carlos, so let's get right to it. Let's go.
Let's go, and we also have two interviews today. They're going to be with Wendy Doolin and Marina Alex. You don't want to miss that. And in our practice range, we're going to bring you an early preview of next month's Solheim Cup. Who's in, who's out? There's only two tournaments left for the girls to qualify, so it's getting right there to the nitty-gritty. So we are going to dive right into and tell you how is it going and what to expect in this next 2 weeks before it actually gets everybody selected. So, but like you said, there was a major this past weekend, and we're going to start the weekend pack stream with the recap of the Open Championship. Fred, how about that win by Jordan Spieth?
Well, the win was something else, but, we're going to cover it in depth here in a minute, but, you know, before that, on Saturday, Brandon Grace set the all-time record firing a 62 in a major championship. I'm sorry, excuse me, folks. That's the first time that's ever been done. And, you know, he was 8 under par. It's a par 70 golf course. And in 442 major championships, it's the first time anybody shot a 62. He had 10 of 14 fairways, 16 greens. And then Johnny Miller said, well, the course was just too easy. Of course, remember Johnny shot that little 63 at Oakmont that time, and what was it, 1975? You know, he kind of thought that was pretty cool stuff. And, of course, you know, Brandon, nobody could beat his record. So he didn't think it was all that special, but I thought it was pretty cool. There was a lot of low scoring on Saturday. That was really the news blast on Saturday was the low scoring. The weather was perfect. They did have the course set up probably a little bit easier. There was a number of rounds in the 60s. Kuchar and Spieth went low on Saturday, kind of separates themselves from the rest of the field. But, you know, that was great. But then Sunday rolled around. It was a little overcast. It was a little cooler. A little bit of a breeze was up. It didn't really rain, maybe a few drops, but not like it could. But Jordan Spieth, I mean, Carlos, I know you disagree with me on this, but this win puts Spieth in a new class. He and Rory have clearly separated themselves from the other young guys. And if Rory doesn't start winning some majors again soon, Spieth's going to catch him and pass him. At the age, he's just almost 24, but not quite. But he's won three majors, and he did that younger than Tiger and Jack. So, I mean, that's amazing stuff. You know, he started out with three bogeys in his first four holes. I mean, he looked bad. He got a bad break on the very first hole. The ball should have kicked out into the first cut or into the fairway, but it stuck in some tall grass right at the base of a mound. I mean, it was in jail. All he had to do was try and knock it out of there, just punch it out. And he just never could get anything going. So he bogeyed the first hole, bogeyed the second, bogeyed the fourth. Kuchar caught up to him. Now they're tied. I'm texting guys back and forth, and we're going, this thing's over. You know, he's lost this. He's choking like a dog. It just ain't going to happen. Kuchar kept hitting fairways and greens. He just kept, doing his thing. But, one of the things, and I know you guys make fun of me for this, but one of the things that professional golfers have is a caddy that they can trust. And Jordan has one of the very best in Michael Greller. And he played a big role, and he was really the steady hand in Spieth's remarkable round last Sunday. And Greller said, I just told him to go back to the Temple of the Travelers because it was really similar. He was leading wire to wire and was having some tough times. It just so happens this was a major, not a regular tour event. He knows what to do. This was the 13th time he's had to lead in a major. He's been there before. So it's not like this was his first time. He was easy to work with. He's matured a lot in the last 6 years since I met him. It wasn't that difficult. He's heard a lot since the 2016 Masters, and I'm sure somewhere in there some doubts had crept in. He just said, you know what? I know how to do this. He's done it twice before and now three times. It was just cool to see him with his back against the wall more than Augusta in 2016. To do what he did just shows his character and his grit. So, Carlos, he and Kuchar basically play even all the way through the rest of the nine holes. And they make the turn, and they're still pretty even. They go to 13. And so after the round, Spieth said, Kuchar had driven first. He hit it in the right rough. And Spieth said, we really aren't trying to hit the fairway. They were trying to drive it into the right rough because you just can't hold that fairway at the angle that it sits. So we're trying to drive it in the right rough. And so he comes out of it just a little bit, which he had not driven that well all week. He was down in the field and driving. It was not pretty, but his iron play and his chipping and putting were just magnificent, so it offset it. But he pushes this drive so far right onto the mound, and there's a guy standing there, and it hits him in the head. And the ball bounces even farther away onto the other side of the mound away from the hole and into some knee-high deep heather, weeds, crap, whatever you want to call it. And he is dead meat. He's dead meat. So what are you going to do? He can't chop it out of there. He probably should have gone back to tee and re-teed it. And he comes up with the idea of taking the drop in the practice range, which is the hole right along the side of the practice range. There was all kinds of trucks sitting there. Where are you going to drop it? You're going to make a move these trucks? What's the deal? Anyhow, 20 minutes later, it took him 20 minutes to sort this thing out. He drops on the range, knocks a 3-iron up short of the green, chips on, and makes the all-time bogey of all bogeys. And now he's behind Kuchar. Then he turns it on. Birdie almost holds it. It's a par 3, 14. He almost jars it, rolls right by the edge of the hole. He knocks it in for birdie. Then he knocks in a 50-footer for eagle at the par 5, 15. Then goes birdie 16, birdie 17. By this time, he's got the two-shot lead. It's well in hand. But what a turnaround, Carlos. I enjoyed really watching it. I know you really like watching Mickelson and Henrik Stenson last year in that duel at Troon, and that was phenomenal. They were both at the top of their games, playing great golf. There's just punch, counterpunch, punch. There's like two heavyweight fighters. I understand that. But Carlos, Jordan Spieth, with the demons from the Masters, from number 12 running around in his head, at the depths, after number 4, I mean, most guys would have just packed it in and said, this ain't my day, and just mailed in the last 14 holes. But he continued to fight and found it somewhere deep inside to make that run on the back nine. Carlos, to me, that was really unbelievable and interesting to see and watch.
You know, I love Jordan Spieth. I liked him a lot. I mean, I remember when I saw him in the Puerto Rico Open, he was standing by me. I didn't know he was going to be what he is right now, but he's something special, and I love his game. And we've talked at large about him and all that. But to me, this Open Championship, I'm sorry, Fred, this was a snooze to me. Really, I was in a place there in a sports bar watching with some other people, and they're Texans. They were pulling for Spieth and all that, but all of a sudden there was something better to watch. They started watching after he came back after that 13th tee, which I got to give it to you. I mean, Michael Grayler's call on there was really the key for what he was doing, because he was going to hit a 3-wood, not the 3-iron. The 3-iron was Michael Grayler's idea. And he thought when he went up to the mound there and he did that, he tried that yardage in his head, and he said that he thought he was somewhere around 270 to the front, and Michael told him, "Hey, buddy, you know, it's just 230 to the front, somewhere around there." And when Spieth said, he said that when he saw the confidence with what Michael was saying, and after that, Michael told him, "No 3-wood, hit 3-iron." He immediately said, "Okay, no, I got to do it," and that was definitely the turning point. But it was, to me, Spieth against Spieth. I mean, he never got pressure from Matt. Matt was just playing for riding along, you know, and it was good. Yeah, he did a great tournament, great final round, and he played against himself. That's my point. Nobody else in the whole tournament stepped up. It was whether Jordan was going to make it or not. He didn't. Came back. He just steadied the ship and won the tournament. If he wouldn't have steadied it, then he wouldn't have done what he said, that he said he wanted to throw that dirt over the memory of the collapse in the Masters and get over the hill, like he called him. But that hill on which he's bulking to rest, definitely it was going to be better negotiated by a goat than a golfer, and he did it incredibly. So I give him his props, and well-earned, he did it. But it wasn't because he did a back and forth like last year with Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson, who went and established a record with the 20 under. I mean, it was back and forth, birdies here, eagles by Mickelson. Mickelson did the only eagle, and he still lost. I mean, that was that is really a final round for the ages. That Jordan Spieth came back and did his thing. Yeah, I mean, you could have expected it. It was either he was going to fall flat in his face or he was going to be coming back, because Matt Kuchar was not doing anything. I mean, since the day before, when Matt Kuchar said, "I want no part of a match play with Jordan Spieth," what kind of an athlete says, "I don't want to go and win a major championship"? That's what you're going to have to do. You're going to have to be playing 1-1 against Jordan Spieth, because nobody else was going to step up. I mean, when do you see Magic Johnson say, "I want no part of playing with Larry Bird in this finals"? No, no, no way. Or vice versa. "No, I don't want to play with Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan. No, I don't want any part of it." No. That's what really got me. I don't know why I woke up so early. Because I knew what was going to happen. Because Matt Kuchar was not going to do anything. This was just a snooze of a tournament. I texted you. I hope it was great that he came back down, because otherwise I didn't want it to see a rout. Because it really would have been really boring. More boring than it was, really. I like what he did, but I find that he did it against himself. Not against, he had an opponent that was putting pressure on him, and he had to go back and forth like Henrik had to do with Phil, with really, really had somebody there down his throat trying to get the win away from him. So this, to me, it cannot be even compared or even talked about in any of the greatest final rounds of any major tournament. It cannot be. It was a great performance by him, but it wasn't one of the best final rounds because it was him. If you say, it just, you have to have an opponent. And the only opponent he had, Fred, I'm sorry, it was Jordan Spieth.
In golf, though, Carlos, that's exactly what you're playing against. You're playing against yourself. You're playing the course. Everybody's playing the same course, but you're playing against yourself. And Jordan was definitely fighting himself on that first nine. He just couldn't get in the rhythm. He couldn't get his head wrapped around what was going on. Just things weren't going the right way. And like I say, most guys would have just at that point just said, you know, this is not happening today. We'll just collect a big check and we'll go on. But Jordan dug down and said, I'm going to win this thing. So, and to your second point, Matt Kuchar, you know, I know you heard him say that, but for Kuchar, his whole game is based off consistency. He is, you know, he and guys like Zach Johnson, Steve Stricker, I mean, they are consistent. They're there week in, week in, week out. He plays that cut off the tee to hit fairways. He gives up distance, but he gains accuracy. He's always in the fairway. He's always hitting greens. And if he's making putts that week or maybe chipping something in, that's when he wins. But I will say this, okay, on kind of a little side note. I really don't think Kuchar can win an open on a Lynx course playing that baby fade. He's accurate. It works well for him, especially in the States on traditional style golf courses, but it just doesn't work in the wind. When you want to roll, you want to play the ball along the ground, and when you're playing a cut, it doesn't roll out. So many times on Sunday, if you notice, his shots into the green came up just slightly short because he'd throw that little fade up into the wind and it would knock it down. If he was turning it over and playing a draw, it would have bore through the wind and he'd have got the yardage out of it. So, I think the same is going to hold true for Augusta National. I know he's played well there in the past, but I don't see him winning it against the National with that. I'm sorry. I don't see him winning with that fade. I that's why you see the left-handers, Mickelson and Bubba, doing so well at Augusta, because their ball hits those slopes and rolls out, where a fade hits into them for a right-hander, and it just checks up, it sets up. So it makes him consistent, but he's given up too much yardage into the greens, especially when he's going into the wind. So another point about Kuchar, again, he prides himself on being consistent. You know, week in, out, tournament in, tournament out, he's consistent. He's always there. But I'm telling you what, he did not expect to see his family on the 18th green. They flew overnight from Colorado to come in there to see him on the final day to finish. And his boys were physically crying that he had lost. And, you know, Kuchar's always pretty cool and calm. But I don't know if you noticed that after he went over and met with his family off the side of the 18th green, he was shaken. He was emotional. This got to him, you know, and he's thinking, you know what, I'm playing my game to be consistent and making checks, but I got to win for these boys. I can't let them see me to be consistent and give up this much and lose these things. I can't do that anymore. I really think this was a pivotal moment for Matt Kuchar. They missed it. They didn't show it on the cameras. They breezed right by because they were following Spieth up the hill to the scores tent. But I caught just a little bit of that as they went by. And watching Kuchar's mannerisms after, I really think this was important for him. I think he's going to have more of a killer instinct. I think he's going to win more. I look for him to have a really big year the rest of this year and going into next year. I think this was important for him. So Carlos, I don't know if you want to say anything else about Kuchar or Spieth before we move on to some of the other guys, but that was kind of my thinking on some of that.
Yeah, I know what you're referring about him there at the end, and it was actually Jordan Spieth afterwards who came and consoled the Cameron, which is Matt Kuchar's older son, consoled him afterwards. Jordan even mentioned that, and he saw that, and he went there to console him and told him that, hey, your dad is going to win one of these days sooner than later and all that. Yeah, I know. And that was touching and all that. But maybe and I hope it's true that this lights a fire on him, because I understand what you're saying, that you're playing against yourself, but that's not the case. Because you have 144 or more players against you, and you know what Jack Nicklaus said: when somebody starts complaining about the field of the course, that's one less player I have to play against. So no, you're not playing against yourself. You're playing against a lot of other people out there, and you have to go out there and put pressure on whoever is on top if you want to go and win it. Yes, you have to play the game within the game within yourself. But there's other players out there. If you're in second place, you have to play your game and try to put some pressure on the guy that is ahead. You have to have that mentality to go and play it. That's why I'm saying maybe now, hopefully, it's set on him, and it meant, oh, man, I lost this. I should have done this, and I should have changed my approach. I understand it, what you're saying. Zach Johnson, Steve Stricker, they play all for consistency. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to have the mentality to go out there and go play. Because what he did in the Olympics to go to third place wasn't just being consistent. That final round wasn't about just let me see if I get consistency and I get to third place. No, he went out there, and he said it, I went out there to go and try to win that bronze medal. It's different. It's different. It's a mentality thing, and that's what Jordan Spieth has better than anybody else. And I know he hates to be compared with Tiger Woods, but that's what he has better than any other player. No one is as competitive as Jordan Spieth is on golf. No one. And when he is on, nobody else. Everybody else starts playing for second, which is what Matt did. That's what happened. And I know, Jordan, I'm sorry you don't like to be compared to Tiger, but that's exactly what happened with Tiger. Tiger said, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to win. I'm not here to play for second. And that's the difference. And that's why, to me, this one, and you saw it on the ratings. I mean, it was down 8% from the final round last year. That should tell you it wasn't the same thing that was last year, Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson. It wasn't. And it cannot be compared in the same way. Excellent, excellent play, and congratulations for Jordan. I'm happy for you that you got your third. You're just one away from the career Grand Slam, and it's the easiest of them for him to win. I think he'll reach it sooner than later, and hopefully he can do it now. I mean, for me right now, he's the front runner for Player of the Year, and it has to be taken away from him, and congratulations to him. But really, this tournament, to me, it didn't live up to the expectations that I wanted. I hoped that 17 and 18 was going to bring an incredible final finish there, but it wasn't. I'm sorry.
Okay, we beat that up, so we're going to agree to disagree on that one. But let's talk about some of the other guys here just a little bit. There were some other guys in the field. Rory continues to be inconsistent. You know what? He has lost the joy of playing golf. For him right now, it's just a business. It's you know, and he said this was a lost opportunity, but he just didn't have his heart in it when he was starting. Matter of fact, JP even asked him during the first race, he says, "What are you doing here?" You know, he was making bogeys. I mean, it was ugly his first round. And finally on the back nine, he kind of got engaged and he ended up making something out of it, but you know, he hasn't won a major since 2014. That's a long stretch for him. I mean, he's much better now. Now, he's had some injuries and some things happen that have cost him a couple starts in majors. But you know, It's just not happening right now for Rory. He's just, you know, we always know he's going to be inconsistent. He's going to get on those hot streaks and excuse me, and then light it up. But right now, he's just not. It's just not happening for him. You know, he has trouble with putting, or he has trouble with hitting the driver. You know, something's always off a little bit. But I did see some life in him later in the week, so maybe he can build on that and get back to a good place. There's a lot of golf left yet this year. We got the PGA Championship, we got the Bridgestone WGC, we got the FedEx Cup playoffs, and then, you know, we're going to go into the he's not in the President's Cup, but then they're going to go into the Race to Dubai. So there's a lot of golf left for him, but he's just not. It's not fun to watch him right now like I used to like to watch him. So I don't know what's going on there. Did you see – what did you think about Hua Tong Li? He became the first Chinese player to almost win a major. He made 7 birdies in his last 11 holes on Sunday's par 63. He posted the minus 6 early, was leader in the clubhouse, and then had to wait to see what Spieth and Kuchar were going to do. But he was looking good there for a while. When those guys were going backwards on the front nine, his 6-under was looking pretty good. Did you got any thoughts on Hua Tong Li?
Oh, no, definitely. That's 63. He definitely leave his mark on that sensational birthday weekend. I mean, it pays off. He said that he had been inconsistent in being patient. And he learned how to do that. I mean, he was understandably excited when he held that birdie putt on the 18th green, which capped that round of 63 and vaulted him well up the leaderboard. He was playing alongside a two-time Open champion Ernie Els. So, but he was really – he had that giddiness, and he's something really nice to watch. He's going to – I mean, I remember a month ago he was playing his first major at the U.S. Open, and he shot 82 and 84 – to finish last among the players who made the cut, but now he went 69-63 on the weekend, and that tells you that, and he said it, that he finally is learning the waiting game, and what an incredible round. I mean, 63 in a major championship history. I mean, Brandon Grace on Saturday became the first ever to shoot 62, so that puts you into perspective of what kind of an incredible run he did there to close, and he ended up 6 shots behind, but he definitely makes his mark, and he's somebody who's worth watching going forward.
Some of the other notables, Carlos, Brooks Koepka, the U.S. Open champ, got a lot of TV time with a T6 finish. It was a good week, proved his U.S. Open win was no fluke. He was tied with Alex Noren, Brandon Grace, and Mark Leishman. Henrik Stenson, the defending champion, finished T11 with Paul Casey. He's having one of his best years of his career. How about that young Austin Connolly from Canada? He played with absolutely no fear. He finished tied with Zach Johnson, Chris Wood, Jason Duffner, Hideki, and Ian Poulter at T14. Poulter, speaking of him, was a factor early in the week. He shot a first-round 67, followed up with 70-71-70, so pretty consistent. And, you know, Poulter is really playing well right now. He has come back. And he's back to being a world-class player when, you know, after being pretty much out of the picture maybe 6-7 months ago. Jason Day, still proving he's not quite back yet, finished T27. He just had a poor round on Friday, shot a 76, but he is looking a little bit better. I think I saw some positive stuff from him last week. There was a bunch of guys tied with Jason Day for T27. One of those, Andrew B. Johnson, very popular guy over there. Tony Finau, who was in as an alternate. Lee Westwood, Daniel Berger, Aaron Baddeley, Bubba Watson, Tommy Fleetwood, and Chongqing Daiji all were tied in there. Ricky Fowler and Adam Scott both finished T22. Ricky was very consistent for the week. Adam had good rounds on Thursday and Sunday, but a 74 on Friday held him back. Jamie Lovemark's a name that just keeps popping up. He continued his strong play in England to finish alongside Scott and Fowler. Dustin Johnson, T54, just could not seem to find the right lines and speed on the Royal Birkdale Greens. He only hit 50% of the fairways and 44% of greens in regulation. That's just not going to get it done. He is just not the same guy from, you know, before he fell down the steps at the Masters. He's just not back yet. Ernie Els posted a fine 68 on Thursday, made the cut on Friday. Couldn't keep pace with the young guys, finished solo 61. Danny Willett finally made a cut, but finished next to last of the 77 men in the field. Snedeker, he was forced to withdraw right before the tournament with a rib injury. When James Hahn got in, Danny Lee became the first alternate, which Lee flew all the way from the John Deere to Royal Birkdale, hung around, but did not get in the field. So it cost him $9,000 to fly over there, hang out for a couple days. Didn't get a chance to get in the field, but that's the life of a pro golfer. So, Carlos, that kind of wraps up what I had on the Open Championship. I don't know if you have any other thoughts or any other things to wrap that up. But for me, Carlos, I really enjoyed watching it. I really liked watching Royal Birkdale, looking at the golf course. I thought Jordan Spieth's performance on Sunday was – I think it'll go down, Carlos. I think it'll go down in history as one of the great final rounds in the history of the Open Championship. I know it doesn't maybe live up to the combative style of Stenson and Mickelson last year, but for Spieth to be in the situation he was in and completely reverse it, turn it around, and do what he did, birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie. Phenomenal stuff, Carlos, phenomenal.
He's not even being talked about this week. I bet you next week, next year, we won't even be talking about that. What a great final it was. Nah. Sorry about that. Sorry, but great that you think about it that way, but it will never, ever be compared to any of the other finals. I mean, it was a great performance for him, but it's not one of the greatest finals now. No way, not even close. Sorry. Hey, let's move on to the Marathon Classic. You know, for the second time this year, I.K. Kim, or Inkyum Kim, is a winner on the LPGA Tour. She won the ShopRite LPGA Classic presented by Acer in June and came into this week's Marathon Classic presented by Owens Corning and OI, having missed her last two cuts. But as is the case with golf's unpredictability, she fired an 8-under par 63, which was the best round of the day, and tied for low round of the tournament on Sunday and put the finishing touches on a four-shot victory. She said that the key to her sizzling finish was that on Sunday, the pin positions were a little bit comfortable for her. She had been trying to hit little draws during the week, and when the pin was tucked on the left side, she was having a hard time, but that wasn't the case on Saturday. On Sunday, I mean, this spot, she went bogey-free on Sunday and went out in 6-under par 28. She said she was playing with a clear mind all day, which helped her stay focused despite an hour-long rain delay. It's been a bit of an up-and-down season for her, as her two wins are only her second and third top 20 finish of this year. However, she said Sunday that she feels great about how her game feels heading into the final two majors of the season. Lexi Thompson, she fired a 5-under par 66 and finished runner-up. It was her fifth second-place finish of 2015 to go along with her one win at the Kings Mills Championship presented by JTBC, and one of the second places, I don't even want to talk about it, but anyway. She said that she was hitting a cut around the golf course, and that's usually not what she does, but that she managed to put up some good scores, of which she was very happy about. She shot a 5-under par 66 on Sunday, but just couldn't keep the pressure on Kim as she pulled away from the pack. She felt birdies were available on Sunday, and she certainly took advantage of that. She made 70 total, but stumbled with a couple of bogeys in the 10th and 12th holes. With a couple of bogeys, that's where, as I said before, Kim went bogey-free. So that was really her doing there, those two bogeys. Push her two more shots behind I.K. Kim. 36-hole leader Jarena Pillar finished tied for third along Pei Yun Shin at 15-under. Another lead that Jarena Pillar lets go away, and she's not been able to finally close the door on that first win. But this both notched their best finishes of the year this week in Ohio. Sheehan, meanwhile, said she was very proud of her week. Sandra Chanquilla She finished a shot further back at 14 under par and finished alone in fifth, also her best finish of the year, while Kim Kaufman and last week's U.S. Open women's winner, Sung-hyun Park, finished at 13 under and tied for sixth. Five golfers finished at 12 under and rounded up the top 10, including Angela Stanford, Angel Jean, Brittany Lincecum, Aditi Ashok, and 54-hole leader Nelly Korda, who shot a 3-over par 74 Sunday to drop out of contention. Other notable finishers, Lydia Ko, T20, Inge Shan, T27, Stacey Lewis, T45, and among the notables that missed the cut was Brooke Henderson. Fred, the LPGA Tour now heads to Europe this week for a 2-week stretch, including the Aberdeen Asset Management Ladies Scottish Open and the fourth major of the year, the RICO Women's British Open.
Yeah, as I mentioned, I got to spend some time out at the Marathon Classic last week. Nelly Korda really was playing well, but her inexperience kind of showed. She fell down the leaderboard on Sunday. But I take him. You know what? I will never get the image out of my mind of I take him missing that, what, 1-foot, 2-foot putt at the old Diamond Shore. It's the ANA now, to lose that golf tournament. Remember that? She missed that little putt and cost her the tournament there. Lexi Thompson, Highland Meadows, where they play the Marathon Classic, is a ball striker's golf course. It's not set up for a bomber like Lexi Thompson. And for her to keep it in play and end up runner-up, that shows that she's really working on her versatility because the course is not set up well for her. You said the name Angela Stanford. We never hear from her until around Solheim Cup time, and then, boom, she pops up, and here she was. So, Carlos, that's all I'm going to – well, one more thing. I watched Lydia Ko quite a bit. I watched her on the range. I watched her on the course a little bit. You talk about someone that has no joy. Lydia Ko was always so much fun to be around. She was always smiling. She was always enjoying what she was doing. She was striking clubs well. She was making the shots, playing consistent. There's none of that right now. There is absolutely zero, none of that. Her swing is so screwed up. She's not having any fun on the golf course. It is a real drudge for her. She's not – I tell you what, she really needs to take about a month off and just clear her mind and start fresh. Because where she's at right now, she is not in a very good place. It was hard to watch her. And I love Lydia Ko. I love watching her when she's on her game, and she's not there right now. So, Carlos, the PGA Tour had a second event last week. They had an opposite field event, the Barbasol, which was down in Alabama. You talk about low scoring. Chad Collins fired a 60 on Friday, and Scott Stallings shot another 60 on Saturday. So low scoring going on down there in Opelika, Alabama. Grayson Murray, who's had quite the rookie season on the PGA Tour, you know, if you remember, he made golf news when he fired his caddy, Mike Hicks, mid-round at the Wells Fargo back in May. He also advertised for one of the models to be a caddy earlier this year. So needless to say, at 24 years of age, Murray is somewhat of a free spirit. Well, he can now call himself a PGA Tour winner by winning the Barbasol Championship on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail in Opelika, Alabama. On a week when everyone was going low, Murray added a 67 to a pair of 64s and a 68 on Sunday to get a 21 under par and win by one shot over Collins. Yes, it was an opposite field event, with the Open Championship being the main professional event last week, and he doesn't get the automatic invite to the Masters, but he does get a $630,000 check and a 2-year exemption. So that's going to set him up pretty nicely, Carlos.
Oh, definitely. And he will be playing in the PGA Tour for at least 2 years. So, hey, that's good for him. Hey, let's talk a little bit. Hold on a second.
Sorry about that. Hey, let's talk now about the Pinnacle Bank Championship in Web.com Tour. Sam Ryder. He thought he was due. Twice last year in the Web.com Tour, he finished second. And this year, had been in the top eight four times. He completed his weekend runaway at Indian Creek with a 4-under-67 to finish the 72 some big holes at 21-under-263. I mean, the heat was on and not in a good way. His eight-stroke victory over Omaha and Scott Kucheski, Scott Harrington, Andrew Landry, and Michael Johnson was the largest of the tour season. Only five winners in the tour's 28 years have enjoyed a larger lump. Ryder started Sunday with a seven-stroke lead after Saturday's course records of 62, and only on the first tee he was nervous. That's what he said, only on the first tee. After that, when he made the turn at 3-under-33 after a birdie on the par 4 ninth, everyone was in the rear view mirror at that point, and he was feeling pretty comfortable getting through that front nine. Ryder went 47 holes without a bogey from the ninth hole Thursday to the third Sunday, but ended with two in the final round. While he was taking a victory lap on the back nine, the drama stayed on second place in front of an announced turnout of 15,662 people. Harrington, with the day's low round of 64, finished first at 13-under. Landry got to 14-under before bogey on 18 and left him with a Sunday 66. Then came in Johnson, who shot a 67, came up with birdies on 15 and 16. And Gutchesky, the hometown favorite, birdied the 15th to get back into the tie and needed a 12-footer for par on the 18th to stay there and earn his season high of $39,600. Ryder is taking the next week off as planned, not playing the Digital Alley Open in Overland Park in Kansas because he has played the past eight tournaments in a row. What a way to do it, huh? So the 27-year-old Stetson graduate from Longwood, Florida, rose to second place now on the money list on Web.com Tour with 255,124. Fred, this puts him in a good position to push forward and try to be number one on the money list and, of course, getting ready for the PGA Tour season with a little less pressure on results week to week out there.
You know, what a great name for a golfer, huh? Sam Ryder. That's pretty cool. Gutchesky, was that Scott Gutchesky that did so well there? Was that Scott?
Yes, that's right. Scott Gutchesky.
Yeah, yeah. So he's been around for we remember we had him on the show. He was one of our early guests, one of our early interviews, way back when we started the show several years ago. Remember that? Talking about the web.com, and he's a long time pro, and he's got a couple of brothers that are pros also. Hey, he has been around for a while, yeah. We're going to talk here a little bit about the U.S. Junior Boys. The USGA hosted the Junior Amateur this week at Flint Hills National in Kansas. 17-year-old Noah Goodwin of Corinth, Texas, lost in the final match last year in the Junior Amateur, but this year he overcame being down four. He was four down with just eight holes to play to become the USGA's Junior Amateur champion over Matthew Wolf of Agoura Hills, California. There was only one other bigger comeback ever, and that occurred 2 years ago when Philip Barbari defeated Andrew Orishniak in 37 holes, but he was trailing five holes with eight to play. So a really big comeback for Goodwin. Goodwin's golf coach, by the way, is Cameron McCormick, who sent him a congratulatory note after the win. And as you know, McCormick also had a pretty good week as he works also with Champion Golfer of the Year Jordan Spieth. So, and then he also has that young kid, Austin Conley, that did so well at the Open. So McCormick, man, he's becoming the, you know, who's these other guys? We don't need these other guys. McCormick's the top teacher right now. Goodwin is going to finish up his high school requirements this fall and is looking to enroll at Southern Methodist University in January and play some golf there. So I think he hit one drive, like 350 or 60 yards or something on one of the par fives to leave himself just like a 9-iron in or something. So evidently he can hit it pretty far, Carlos.
Oh, I definitely can. And hey, these youngsters now with this equipment and all their training, it's not uncommon for them to be so long under drives and older shots. Hey, let's talk a little bit now about the Symetra Tour, the Danielle Downey Credit Union Classic. Nana Quartz-Madsen, she kicked the door open, to the LPGA Sunday in record fashion, shooting a 6-under 66 to claim the Danielle Downey Credit Union Classic title at Brulee Country Club. She broke the tour record, finishing 22-under for the week, topping the previous record of 19-under set by Jennifer Song in 2010. This is Quartz-Madsen's third win on the Symetra Tour, earning the Battlefield promotion onto the LPGA. She's the 12th golfer ever to earn a Battlefield promotion and the fourth in 4 years. She will be placed in Category 13 on the LPGA priority list as a member of the Ladies European Tour. She will already play in the Scottish Open next week and looks to qualify for the Women's British Open the week after. So her new LPGA status may help her to get into the last three tournaments, the Cambria Portland Classic, the Indy Women in Tech Championship, and the Canadian Pacific Women's Open. The Danish Quartz-Madsen also has wins in the Symetra Classic and the Fusio Kia Classic this year. She only made 4 bogeys the entire tournament, one in each round with 26 birdies, stayed consistent all week, shooting 66, 67, 67, and 66. Lara Wern started the final round tied for 7th, but shot a final round 7 under 65. To finish alone in second place at 15 under, she had the lowest round of the tournament on Friday in 9 under 63. And Hannah Green tied for the low round Sunday, shooting an 8 under 64 to finish in third place at 14 under. And with that, unless Fred, you have anything else to add, we will wrap up the weekend backspin.
No, just congratulations to Madsen. We're going to talk a little bit more about her when we get to the Solheim Cup thing. I think she just pretty much locked herself into a Solheim Cup berth.
Don't give it away. Don't give it away. We're going to be talking about the Solheim Cup, and definitely she's going to be
Little teaser.
She's going to be in the mix of what we're going to be talking about. So, hey. But let's do a quick preview of what's going to be happening this week. The Champions Tour has what is going to be the Senior British Open. It's going to be played at the Bridgend, Wales, in Royal Porth, Colhoun Golf Course. Purse of $1.7 million of defending champion is Paul Broadhurst. Scott McCarron comes from winning the Constellation Senior Players Championship. The Charles Club Cup leader is Bernard Langer. This is the second time in 4 years that Royal Porthcawl has hosted the Senior British Open. Langer won it 2014. The Americans had won the tournament 11 out of the past 13 years until Broadhurst won it last year at Carnoustie. 6 players from the PGA Tour champions have gone over $1 million this year. Langer went over $2 million with his runner-up finish two weeks ago at the Senior Players, but hey, he's a class apart. He still leads McCarron by more than $600,000, Fred.
Yeah, do you remember when they were there the last time and the wind was blowing about 40 miles an hour and Langer just was hitting those bullets into the wind? He was the only guy that could play that place, and he just ran away with the title when they were there last time. I mean, that was truly a tremendous golfing exhibition that he put on. I wouldn't even want to have been out there. The wind was blowing so hard, I don't know how they even played. But he was really on that week. Hey, the PGA Tour is going to head north of the border for the RBC Canadian Open. You know, Carlos, we're getting down to the end here. Only 4 weeks of 5 events remain before the start of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And 2 of those, one is the WGC Bridgestone, and the other is the PGA Championship. So we're getting right down here to the end of the PGA Tour season. The Canadian Open is one of the oldest championships in the world. It was first held in 1904. Only the Open and the U.S. Open are older than the Canadian Open. The tournament will once again be held in Glen Abbey outside of Toronto. Jonathan Vegas is the defending champion. There's a $6 million purse with a $1.08 million going to the winner. Seven of the top 30 in the FedEx Cup standings, including number two Justin Johnson, are in the field. Johnson seeks to reclaim his lead, which he relinquished to Jordan Spieth last week. He now trails Spieth by 303 points. So Spieth's not playing. If he could win, get to 500, he would jump back around him. Other notables in the field, again, Matt Kuchar, Bubba Watson, and Jim Furyk. So the Canadian Open on TV this week.
And on the LPGA Tour and Ladies European Tour is going to be the Aberdeen Asset Management Ladies Scottish Open. It's going to be played at the Dundonald Links in Irvine, Scotland, a $1.5 million prize with a first prize of $225,000 going to the winner Thursday and Friday. You can watch it on Golf Channel. And Saturday and Sunday is going to be in Golf Channel, but they delayed. The defending champion is Isabel Boynehall. And as you know, IK came coming from winning the Marathon Classic. You know, the European Tour played the Scottish Open at Dundonald Links 2 weeks ago. This is the first year that the Ladies Scottish Open is on the LPGA Tour schedule. It has been part of the Ladies European Tour since 1986 when Mairead Marshall beat Laura Davies by 7 shots at the Dalmahoy. Lexi Thompson is the only player from the top four in the world ranking who is not at the Scottish Open ahead of next week's Women's British Open at Kings Barn. Lydia Ko now has gone a full year without winning on the LPGA Tour. Who would have think of that happening? The field includes Davis, who has made the cut in 3 of her 9 appearances on the LPGA Tour this year, and with the addition of the Ladies Scottish Open to the schedule, now the LPGA Tour has regular tour events in 14 countries, Fred.
Yeah, we talked about the U.S. Junior Amateur wrapped up last week in Kansas. This week, the U.S. Junior Girls is being held at Boone Valley, which is just outside of St. Louis. Over 1,500 young women tried to qualify for this year's Junior Girls Championship. The field will consist of 156 girls 18 years of age or younger. They are playing 2 rounds of medal play to decide the top 64 that will enter match play. And they did that yesterday and today. And Lucy Lee shot 2 rounds of 71-66, 2 under 5 under for the 2 rounds. She is the number one seed. Mika Liu actually shot the low round yesterday. She had a 67 yesterday, but came back with 74 today, so she ended up with T6, so she's in comfortably. 12 countries are represented. There are 33 18-year-olds in the field, with the youngest competitor being Izzy Palat, just 12 years old. You can see all of the action from the U.S. Junior Girls on Fox the rest of this week. It'll be on tomorrow. Match play starts tomorrow. 64, they'll cut down to 32, and match play is always fun watching these young girls play, Carlos.
And one final note, the European Tour has the Porsche European Open. It's a $10 million Euros. It's going to be played at the Green Eagle Golf Club in Hamburg, Germany. Worth noting is that PGA champion Jimmy Walker, Patrick Reed, and Pat Paris are staying there in Europe to play. The field is also including Chase Koepka, who's the younger brother of U.S. Open champion Brooks, and Alexander Levy is the defending champion. Tommy Fleetwood, the Race to Dubai leader, will also be there. And with that, we wrap up the four call, the look ahead of what's going to be played this weekend. And now we're going to move into the Par 5 news. And staying on that side of the pond, Fred, you have some news from the RNA.
Yeah, with the Open Championship being held at Royal Birkdale last week, officials from the RNA were front and center and met with the press in their annual Q&A session. One of the hot topics this year revolved around moving the PGA Championship to May. Why did that affect the Open Championship? Well, the Open would become the fourth and final major every year. As early as 2019 has been targeted for this change, and it would also necessitate the players moving to its previous March time slot. Martin Slumbers, the head of the RNA, said that they have no issue being the fourth major championship instead of the third. I think from our perspective, I don't really mind whether we're the third major or the fourth. We try to do our very best with the Open Championship to make it as good as we can possibly can do. I can absolutely understand some of the logic of a move, and if it ends up resulting in more people watching our game, then that's the outcome we want. Also, a little side issue there came up. Reporters were asking about Bernhard Langer and Scotty McCarron using and the long putter technique that they're using. As you know, Brandel Chamblee kind of stirred up some stuff here in the U.S. about that a week or so ago. Slumbers, the RNA's chief executive, confirmed that the USGA and the RNA were as one in being entirely comfortable that the two players in question were abiding by the rules. I think it's very important to realize and remember in all these cases that our rules and our game are based on the integrity and honesty of our players and the way that they act. To me, that's one of the most wonderful things about this sport. His final comment, though, it's unlikely to stop the subject, was that RNA and the USGA had no intention of revising the rule in any way. And then Bryson DeChambeau's name came up about the way he's putting and his putting style. And Slumber said the equipment standards and rules are pretty clear around that, and yes, you can't have it, so you can create an alignment. Bryson has been talking about that with USGA. We have our equipment standards people here who are happy to sit down with him and make sure that there's no problem, and I hope there's not going to be a problem because he's a terrific, young, exciting player. Carlos, that's kind of the news out of the RNA from last week at the Open Championship.
And the Open Championship officials announced last Tuesday that they are increasing the French women's professional tournament's total prize money to $3.65 million, making it the second largest purse in women's golf and will continue to be the highest purse on the European women's golfing calendar this year. Only the U.S. Women's Open with $5 million features a larger purse in women's golf. Evian's purse is being increased from $3.25 million last year. The winner's check will be $547,500. The increase elevates the LPGA's total prize money to a record $67.65 million, up from the record of $63 million played for last year. That announcement should help boast the prestige of an event, which continues to fight for recognition as a top-tier event, despite attaining major status in 2013. Last year's record scores brought into question the nature of the test. While LPGA star Stacey Lewis has announced that she plans to miss the event altogether due to scheduling issues. LPGA Commissioner Mike Wann said in a statement that while the overall Evian experience consistently sets the standard for unique and special on tour, it's great to see Evian continue to be a leader in growing the economic opportunity for the best female golfers in the world. Meanwhile, the Evian Championship chairman, Frank Riboud, said in a statement that this development once again resonates with their desire to position the Evian Championship as a platform to aid the promotion and growth of women's golf. The LPGA season's final major at the beautiful Evian Resort Golf Club in Evian-le-Bon, France, is scheduled to take place on September 14th through 17th, with Ingy Sean set to defend. Fred, this tournament is a great tournament, but I'm not sure about the idea of a fifth major. Still, I know there's no turning back. I mean, they won't revert to four, but the longstanding tradition of four majors makes it tough to start to grasp that there is a fifth. It will take time for the Evian to be widely recognized and gain the respect the others have. It's only four editions old as a major, and that is the reason why they're pushing this to $5 million in order to ensure the top players keep coming and give it the stature, at least monetary-wise, for it to compete with the other four.
Yeah, absolutely. They kind of threw this thing in there a couple years ago. Did you say Stacey Lewis is even going to play in it this year?
No, she's not going to play. She said that.
Wow.
she had some scheduling issues. I don't have the details. She hasn't gone into it. She just said that she had some scheduling issues and she was not going to play.
That really blows my mind. Carlos, I want to talk a little bit about junior golf here in my section. We got good news this week for the AJGA, the American Junior Golf Association. Rolex has renewed and expanded its sponsorship of the AJGA through 2023. Rolex will now sponsor the Rolex AJGA rankings, which lists the top junior golfers in their events throughout the year. They'll continue to sponsor the Rolex Tournament Champions, which was one of the first two tournaments that ever held with the AJGA. That's going to be moved to November to kind of wrap up the season and be held at PGA National Resort in West Palm Beach. So the AJGA rankings recognize more than 1,800 boys and more than 700 girls based on points earned at AJGA tournaments nationally and other nationally recognized junior golf events. These rankings determine the priority list for AJGA invitationals and entry into other events. They also determine the teams for the Rolex Junior All-American postseason honors and members of the Wyndham Cup, Junior President's Cup, and the Ping Junior Solheim Cup teams. The Rolex AJGA ranking system is widely considered as a top metric in junior golf. So the big thing about AJGA, this is where the major college golf coaches go to recruit their players. They all watch these AJGA tournaments. So it's a great, great association of tournaments around the country. Congrats to Rolex for seeing the importance of the AJGA and increasing their involvement with them. With the junior boys tournament held last week for the USGA and the girls, junior girls this week, the USGA announced that Hazeltine will be the site of the 2020 junior amateur. The 2020 will feature an expanded field, giving more young golfers a chance to participate in the national event. USGA said Hazeltine National Golf Club has been supportive of USGA championships from the inception of the club to the present, and we are appreciative of this committed and enduring relationship. By expanding the U.S. Junior Amateur field in 2020, we are providing additional opportunities for the world's best junior players to compete in the championship, Carlos.
Hey, moving on to proud father, Mark Leishman hopes that the birth of his miracle baby will inspire him to great heights, moving on now from the British Open and going forward. The one bull born and raised professional golfer is, and his American wife, Audrey, welcomed daughter Eva into the world on July 6th. Her arrival came just 2 years after Audrey almost died due to a battle with respiratory distress and toxic shock syndromes. Leishman, already a dad to Harvey, 5 years old, and Ollie, 3, said that Eva was delivered by C-section, weighing 7.2 pounds. The American Bay sportsman spent time with his new bundle of joy before flying to England for the British Open, a major he finished tied for second just 2 years ago. You know, for him, it was so unlikely, he said, that he was ever going to have some more kids, and now he looks at it, and he wasn't even going to have a wife there for a while. So, you know, they call her own miracle baby. And to have a little girl now for them really completes their family. He has two boys and a little girl now. You know, Audrey spent time in an induced coma, as you might remember, when she fell ill in late March 2015, spending 10 days in the hospital. She was given a 5% chance of survival, but she pulled through, and after that, the couple formed the Begin Again Foundation to help other people who find themselves in tough situations. And it's really a great, great story for them. Leishman said that a C-section was planned before ahead for the third child, given Audrey's past health troubles. So, but he said that being at the birth would have trump the British Open if the two did clash, because he really wanted to play the British Open. But if family
was calling, it was going to be first. So, you know, he's going to return now to his Virginia Beach home to spend time with his growing family following the British Open. His parents also, Paul and Polita, will meet their new granddaughter when they visit America in September. So, great story here going for Mark Leishman. We wish him the best. As we've seen and we've talked about his story with his wife, Audrey, and it's great to see them back together. And it shows, because he's really a changed man, a happy man. He's playing great again, Fred.
Yeah, that truly is phenomenal. I mean, she was just pretty much given up for dead, and to have her come back and then have this baby, that's really good for them. Congratulations. Last story here tonight in the Par 5 News, Carlos. Henrik Stenson, you know, was playing in the Open Championship last week. He was a defending champion. And he had an unusual thing happen while he was at Royal Birkdale last week. The rental home he was staying in was burglarized. No one was at the house at the time of the break-in, but the thieves took all of his clothing. Thus, he had to make a trip to the laundromat to clean what he had, what he was wearing. Plus, he called Hugo Boss for some new threads, so they got those to him quick. But Stenson was thankful his family was not in the home when the thieves robbed the home, and said he would not let the loss of his personal property affect his enjoyment of being at Royal Birkdale, defending the title and playing in the Open Championship. The claret jug had been returned to the R&A on Monday, so it was not in the house when it was robbed, so the thieves didn't get the claret jug. So, just a little side note, a little humor there. Too bad for Henrik, but nobody was hurt, and they just lost some stuff. And so that can be replaced, but thieves got away with his clothes last week.
Hey, the good thing is they're all right, and you know, material things can be replaced. And with that, we wrap up our Par 5 news. Now we're going to talk about our VIGs, a very important guest of the week. We have two short interviews here, one with Wendy Doolin and the other one with Marina Alex. And Fred, we're going to talk about Marina Alex interview first. What do we have there for us?
Well, you know, when I saw she was in the field at the Marathon Classic, I really wanted a chance to talk to her. So I went out and followed her group for a while on a Saturday. You know, she was the low American at the U.S. Women's Open just last week, and she moved right up the Solheim Cup ranking. She's now kind of a factor. And she's having by far the best year of her 4-year career. So, had just a nice little chat with her. She came off number 18 on Saturday.
Let's play it.
We're here talking with Marina Alex at the Marathon Classic. She just walked off the 18th green here in her third round. And pretty good week for you again this week.
Yeah, I mean, today was not a very good day, so I dropped quite a bit. But yeah, it's been an okay week. Just a little tired, I think, from last week, so trying to regroup and get ready to have a good day tomorrow.
You've had a really great year. This is by far your best year. I think it's your fourth year on tour.
Mm-hmm.
15 events, only, what, 4 missed cuts?
I'm not sure. I don't check.
5 top 10s.
Okay.
You know, you're playing really well. You were the top. You were the low American at the U.S. Women's Open. What's turned it around this year? Why the good play?
I just think that everything that I've been working on since I've started out here on tour is finally clicking. You know, I've made a lot of swing changes, some putting changes. So it's just kind of all feeling comfortable, and I'm just able to perform a bit better because of that.
You're moving up on the Solheim Cup ranking. Mm-hmm. Is that a goal for this year yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a goal as an American to represent your country and play the Solheim Cup. You know, I'm playing well. I just, you know, play the best that I can and see where that leaves me. I mean, there's only this week and the Scottish and the British, and I'm not playing the Scottish, so I'm only playing the British. So, I mean, it's basically, you know, 5 more rounds of golf for me, and if I make the team, that would be wonderful. If I don't, you know, it is what it is. A lot of people are trending in the right direction right now on the U.S. side, so it'll be a tough battle to see who makes the team.
Have you had conversations with Julie about the team?
Briefly. You know, we talked a little bit at the beginning of the week. She was excited to see me playing well and just, you know, trending in the right direction. But like I said, you know, I'm not the only one that's playing well right now. So you know, just got to keep sticking to my process and see where that puts me at the end of the British.
We're going to keep a close eye on you. Congratulations. Thanks. Great year and good luck on tour.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
That was Marina Alex. And now we have Wendy Doolin. So what can we expect on that interview?
Well, you know, we talked to Wendy. Has been on the show before. I met Wendy last year down at the PGA show. You know, we talked to her about the Senior LPGA Championship. She came up and played in that. She ended up T3 in that a couple weeks ago. And so she hung out up here, came over and played in the Marathon Classic then. And she birdied the 18th hole on Friday evening. And at the time, she was like T57, but some more people moved up. So that put her right inside the cut line. So she made the cut. You know, 48 years old, she's having a very good summer. And she's played in a couple other LPGA Tour events and her high finish at the Senior LPGA Championship. So she's just having fun, and she's enjoying the game more. So I got a chance to talk to her a little bit when she came off the golf course on Friday.
Let's play it.
We're talking to Wendy Doolin, who's playing in the Marathon Classic here in Toledo, Ohio. And she just birdied the 18th hole to go one under for the 2 days. Being inside the cut line, looks like you're about going to be T55 tonight.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. I'm happy that I made the putt. Obviously, it was a 10-foot lefty rider, and that was really good. It went in. Glad the hole stopped it. Yeah, so we get to play on the weekend. So
showing these young girls how to play a little golf.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just enjoying being outside. I haven't enjoyed golf for many, many years, and probably the last 5 years of my career, and I enjoy it now, and I enjoy playing golf a lot. I like enjoy competing.
Is there one thing that has turned that around?
My attitude, I think. My perspective. I love teaching. I have a passion for teaching, and it's okay to want to do two things. I think I got a great guy, and he's really supportive of what I'm doing, and I guess I'm just in a good place in my life to be able to do both things.
A couple weeks ago, you finished T3 at the first major on the Legends Tour, the Senior LPGA French Lick. Mm-hmm. You're coming in here, making the cut with the kids. It's yeah. A good summer.
Yeah, it is. It's been a fun summer. I played some mini tour events in Orlando, then I played KPMG, and then went to the Senior LPGA, and now I'm here. And it's been a fun couple months. It's nice to play, and I'm just enjoying, you know, learning how to play again, really.
You've been around for a while, so I just want to ask you one quick question. All the hubbub going around about the dress code and all this stuff, what's your opinion? What's your feelings on that?
I think somebody should dress in a way that respects the rules and the regulations of the LPGA. So whatever the rules are, I think it's good that we dress and respect those rules.
Wendy, we want to wish you a lot of luck for the weekend and the rest of the summer.
Thanks, Fred.
And there you have it. Those were our two VITs, Marina Alex, who we'll be talking a little bit in a short while, and when 48-year-old Australian player Wendy Doolin. She's still dealing there with the young girls and doing her stuff, right? So any final words on them before we move on to the practice range?
No, I think that pretty much covered it. I was really curious to see Marina Alex, and she's a solid player. She believes in what she's doing right now, and I think that's probably the biggest thing for her because of her good play right now. She's been around for a couple of years, so she's more comfortable on the golf course, and it would be cool to see her have a good finish at the Women's British and get on that Solheim Cup team. That would be very cool.
Don't give it away, don't give it away, don't give it away, like the song from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. But anyway, with that, we wrap up our VIG, Very Important Guests of the Week. Thank you to Marina Alex and Wendy Doolin for being part of it. Now let's move to the practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic and each one of us give our own shots, our own take on it. And this week, it's about the practice range. We'll be talking about the Solheim Cup. For those of you who don't know and are listening for the first time, this is a biennial team competition between the top women professional golfers from Europe and the United States. It's a three-day match play event between teams of 12 players with a similar format to the Ryder Cup. Julie Ingster will be the captain for the U.S. team for the second time, and Annika Sorenstam will captain the European team for the first time. The tournament debuted in 1990, and Team USA leads 9-5. Team USA is the defending champion after they rallied to win miraculously 2 years ago in Germany to win 14.5-13.5. The 2017 Solheim Cup is the 15th edition of the Solheim Cup matches. It's being held in August 18 to the 20th at the Des Moines Golf and Country Club in West Des Moines, Iowa. There are two remaining tournaments to get qualification points. Those are the Ladies Scottish Open, which is this weekend, July 27 to the 30th, and the Women's British Open, which is August 3 through 6, also in Scotland. They will have 1 week off, and then they will head to West Des Moines in Iowa to play there. We're going to talk to you about who's in, who's out, who we think is going to make at the end each team, but we're going to tell you first about Team USA. You know, both teams have different criteria on selecting their teams. The criteria selection for Team USA is the top 8 point earners, straight out. Then the two players from the Rolex rankings, the two highest ranked players in the Rolex rankings that are not already qualified by points, and two captain's picks. Julie Ingster, the captain, will make those wildcard picks. Right now, the standings as they are. Lexi Thompson way ahead in number one. Stacey Lewis is number two. Jarena Pillar solid in number three. Christy Kerr is number four, solid there too. Jessica Korda number five. Danielle Kang, with that outstanding major victory a couple of weeks ago, jumped all the way to number six, and she's solidly there. Brittany Lang is tied with Michelle Wee for seventh. That means those are the top eight players right now, straight out. Right after those come maybe this. Brittany Lincecum is right there, 237 points behind the 247 from Brittany Lang and Michelle Wee. But Brittany Lincecum is the first highest ranked player in the Rolex rankings that is not right now on the top eight. So she's right on number ninth, and she's the top player. So you can fairly say that she's safe. Right. Then number 10 is Angela Stanford with 232. 11th is Austin Ernest with 227. 12th, because there are 12 players, is Lisette Salas with 216.5. But she's right now the second highest ranked player not selected on the Rolex rankings, and she's solid there. So given the way that it is right now, you can fairly say and safely say that Lexi Thompson, Stacey Lewis, Jarena Pillar, Christy Kerr, Jessica Korda, Danielle Kang, Brittany Lang, and Michelle Wee are the top eight. Brittany Lincecum and Lisette Salas will be the top two on the Rolex rankings. Those are 10. So that leaves two open spots for Julie Ingster to select. There's Angela Stanford, like I mentioned, 232 points. Austin Ernest, 227. Marina Alex, who we just heard, she has an uphill to climb, but hey, nothing's impossible. There's a major coming, so you never know. She has 182.5 points, which puts her around 44.5 points. It's a steep climb, but hey, she doesn't have to make it on points. This is a captain's pick. Mo Martin has 178, and from there it's Jennifer Song, Allison Lee, Kim Kaufman, Ryan O'Toole. And if you're asking where Paula Creamer is, she's number 20. And if you're asking Morgan Perezzo, she is number 23. So basically, they are really out. They're not going to make it unless Julie Ingster thinks otherwise, but I don't think so. Our job right now is to tell you who we think would be those two. To me, Fred, it comes just down to three players, basically. Angela Stanford, who's a 39-year-old veteran, member of six Solheim Cups, who didn't have a great record before entering last edition, and despite a tough week, she stayed positive and then earned a point. The most important of her career, when she defeated the toughest player on the European side, Susanne Petersen, 2-1 to put the event tied at 13.5 and paving the way for U.S. anchor and captain's pick Paula Creamer to finish off the biggest comeback in Solheim Cup history with a 4-3 win over Sandra Gall. Her record's still not that impressive. It's 4-13-3, and her recent results is a TA there at the Marathon Classic, T33, cut T25, T45, T46, a cut third, T9, and a 53rd. Austin Ernest, she's a 25-year-old from Greenville, South Carolina. She played 2 years for LSU Tigers, where she won 3 events, including the individual 2011 NCAA Division I Championship. She has 1 career win at the 2014 Portland Classic, where she defeated recent Marathon Classic winner I.K. Kim in a playoff. She has team events experience, having played in the 2012 Curtis Cup and going 2-1-1 in it. But her past results, recent results, her past 10 are not that impressive. She has a T35, T44, T29, T55, a cut, a T11, T34, T23, T33, and a cut. So she's definitely not in form lately. And Marina Alex is the third one that comes down to. Her strong performance there at the 72nd U.S. Women's Open increased her chances to represent the United States at next month's prestigious Solheim Cup, and her tie for 11th represented, like you said, Fred, their best finish by an American. She's a 26-year-old that went to Wayne Hills High, played her youth golf at North Jersey Country Club and her college golf at Vanderbilt, and is in a position she always dreamed about and more. And she has the form, maybe the best of all these three players, of any other players as well, remaining to try to qualify. Her past 10 results is a T27, that T11 at the U.S. Women's Open, T25, a T8, 2 cuts, an 8th place, a T23rd, a T9, and a T29. So definitely she's been in the top 30 or top 20 a lot of the time. She has 3 top 10s there squeezed in those 10 results. So she definitely has the form and is playing very well. And if she keeps it up in this next 2 tournaments, she would definitely make Julie Inkster's case easy. For me, those 2 players, Fred, before I turn it off to you, should be Angela Stanford and Marina Alex.
Yeah, it kind of depends on which way you want to go. I'm not so sure that Michelle Wee is going to be one of the top 8. It's a possibility somebody could jump over her and jump into that 8th spot. It's probably unlikely. She's been injured. I'm not sure if she's – yes.
For that to happen, it has to be somebody that is like Danielle Kang that came from out of nowhere and win the Women's British Open and happen. That's the only way that would be out of that top 8.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it's probably not likely, but it depends on Michelle's health also. You know, she had to jump out of withdrawal from the U.S. Women's Open. We haven't seen her, so I don't know how she's getting along. She's had a lot of injury problems the last couple of years. So, but she loves Solheim Cup, so if she's able to swing a golf club, I'm sure she's going to be there. But like you say, I think the decisions for Julie Inkster are definitely a lot easier than they are for Annika Sorenstam. We're going to get into that in a minute. She only has to choose 2 spots because 8, like you say, are going to qualify on the points, and 2 more are going to qualify for the Rolex ranking. And those 2 are Brittany Lincecum and Lizette Salas, and that's probably going to stay the same. So from the group who's not currently in and she's going to be picking from, I really think it's going to be from Angela Stanford, Audrey Ernst, Marina Alex, Mo Martin, Jennifer Sauner, Allison Lee, and there's an outside shot for Nelly Korda. Now, Nelly played really well this week in Toledo. If she would happen to have I don't know if she's playing the Scottish now, but she would happen to have a good week in the Scottish or the British Women's, she could really jump herself up. And I think if that were the case, I think Julie would pick her in a heartbeat because she is an exciting player to watch. Angela Stanford, I mean, you know what you get with her. She's consistent. She's quiet. She'll do whatever you know want her to do for the team. So Julie, I'm sure, will like that. So, you know, are you going to pick a young person? Are you going to pick an old person? Are you going to pick an old and a young? I don't see Mo Martin getting picked. I just don't see it. Jennifer Song or Allison Lee is going to have to do something in either the Scottish or the British women's to get picked. So for me, it comes down to either Andrew Stanford, Austin Ernst, or Marina Alex. And I think Marina has to have one more good finish. And I'm talking about probably a top 20 in the women's British to be in consideration here. So I think we're kind of on the same page, Carlos. I think we're kind of saying the same thing. The top 10 spots are probably pretty well set, and it's going to come down to who Julie's going to pick, and it's probably going to come from one of the three, Stanford, Ernst, or Alex.
Totally agree. I think that she would take at least Angela because of the experience factor. I don't think she would pick two that are rookies on that there. So
yeah.
Thinking of that, I think Angela she's going to be picked. And Marina definitely is the one that has the hottest hand right now of all the other players. Nelly Korda is not in the Ladies Scottish Open, which really leaves her only with the Women's British Open, and she's going to have to really, really do really good there to jump over Marina. To me, it looks like Angela and Marina are there. And I agree also that Julie Ingster has just two spots, and it's really easy. There are not that many players that are playing that good right now, and Paula Creamer and Morgan Pressel never did any push for it, so it's not like she's going to have to think about that. Those two are out totally.
No.
So definitely if she wants a veteran presence, there's Angela Stanford, and she knows what she, like you said, she knows what she's getting with Angela Stanford.
Yeah.
Yep. But let's move on now to Team Europe. Team Europe is different. They have a different selection criteria. They select the first four on the Solheim Cup points from the Ladies European Tour. Those are Ladies European Tour players that are playing there in the Ladies European Tour, and for the past 2 years have been accumulating points towards the Solheim Cup. Then there's also the players that are not in there that are the top four players on the Rolex World Rankings on the European from European descendants. So they have to be European there. There are eight players, four from the Ladies European Tour Solheim Cup points and four from the Rolex World Rankings. And Annika Sørensen, on her first time, she's going to have to pick four wild cards. And she has a ton of players that are playing really good, and like Fred said, it depends on how you want to go, which we don't know, because this is the first time that Annika is going to be really the one calling the shots, how she's going to go with it. You can either go, because right now on the 8th, and I'm going to name them right now, on the Ladies European Tour Solheim Cup points, Georgia Hall, youngster, 21-year-old from England, is the top player earning points on the Ladies European Tour Solheim Cup points. Florentina Parker is number two. Both of them have never played in the Solheim Cup, so she has two of the eight. The other eight, the other six have played before. Melissa Reed. Mel Reed is number three, and Anna Nordqvist is number four. And on the world Rolex World Rankings, Carlota Sigand is number one. Suzanne Pedersen is number two. Charlie Hall is number three, and Karini Kerr is number four. Now, what is left to select? If you go from the Rolex rankings, which I believe Annika will pay a lot of attention to it, because that's including not only the Ladies European Tour, but also the LPGA, Jody Ewart-Chatoff from England is number 45. She's a 29-year-old. She's played in one Solheim Cup before. That was in 2013. And has a record of 2-1-1, and she's a very consistent player, and is the highest player right now that is not selected, that it's number five that is out from the Rolex rankings. Caroline Masson, the German, she's number 66, a 28-year-old. She has played in two Solheim Cups. She has a record of 2-3-2,
It was a 2-1-1 in 2013 and 0-2-1 last edition. So she's another player that she has to consider. Another one that I hope she gets a lot of attention to, and we talked to you talked to her not long ago in our show, is Madeline Sackstrom from Sweden. She's number 68. She's on the move. Last year, she's a 24-year-old. She played college golf for the LSU Lady Tigers. She joined the Symetra Tour last year, where she finished inside the top five in her first five starts. With her third win at the Murphy USA El Dorado Shootout, she both secured the top spot on the final Warwick race for the card money list and earned a Battlefield promotion for the 2016 LPGA Tour. She had a record-breaking Symetra Tour season, became the first player in tour history to crack the $100,000 and $150,000 winning Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year honors in 14 Symetra Tour starts. She had three wins and 11 top 10 finishes. She's definitely one that she's going to be looking at. Azahara Munoz, a veteran. She's number 76 from Spain, 29 years old. She has a 4-6-1 record, but she went 0-3-0 in 2015. Sandra Gall from Germany. She's number 85, 32-year-old, 2-3-2, and she was one of the lone bright spots, of the few bright spots in the 2015. She went 2-1-1, so she's one that could be looked at. Another one, which is a long shot, I'm going to stay in the 100, top 100. It would be Katrina Matthew from Scotland, 91, but she's a 47-year-old. She has a winning record, 12-9-8, but doesn't play in the Solheim Cup since 2013 when she went 0-2-2, so she's definitely on the other way out. And Georgia Hall, who we already mentioned, the 21-year-old from England, is 94, but she's already in. Now, from the Ladies European Tour, we already talked that there's Florentina Parker there. She's a 20-year-old. She's in. Melissa Reed, 29 years old. 6 left wins. She's a great player. So while she's there, Anna Nerquist. But after that, there's Klára Spilková from Czechoslovakia. She's a 22-year-old with one Ladies European Tour win, and it was this year at the Lada Medium Cup, and she's an on-the-rise player there in the Ladies European Tour. She also has Emily Christine Pedersen from Denmark, a 21-year-old that was the Rookie of the Year in the Ladies European Tour in 2015, but has started to slip a little bit, and is 30th this year, so she's not that player in form, but hey, she's one that is there as well. Nana Kortz Madsen, yes, the one that we just talked about a little while ago. She's a 22-year-old. She has already one win in the Ladies European Tour last year. And like we mentioned before in the weekend recaps, weekend backspin, she's tearing up the Symetra Tour. She just got her third win and became the 12th golfer ever to earn the Battlefield promotion. She definitely is one that she has to take care of. And the other one that she might consider that has to be talked about because of her previous record, but maybe not than the one now, is 28-year-old Swedish Caroline Hetwall. She has 5 Ladies European Tour wins, but none since 2012. She does have an 8-4-1 record in the Solheim Cup. We all remember she was the MVP in 2013 when she went unbeaten 5-0-0. But she went 1-3-0 in 2015 and is down all the way to 151 in the world. Now the dilemma, what is Annika Sörenstam going to do? I know that she has 8 players already. Of those 8, 6 of them have experience. And what do you do? Do you go and experience and go fill up the 4 wild cards with rookies? Like, let's say Madeline Sackstrom. You go Klára Spilková, you go Nana Kortz Madsen, and who else are you going to pick? The veteran, but then you have 2 veterans that you can choose that I think she can think of. Jordi Iwashada is playing very well. She's the highest ranked player right now that is not selected, and he's very high. He's 45, you know, and she's experienced already in the Solheim Cup. And of the others, Caroline Masson is not playing that good. I wouldn't pick her. Azahara Munoz is not that good right now. Sandra Gall, she's good in the Solheim Cup. She definitely is the one that you would like to see, especially in the 2015. She went 2-1-1. But she has to pick 4. Fred, I think and I hope that she goes home and thinks about Madeline Sackström, her countrywoman from Sweden that's on the rise, picks her. I think she's going to go 3 unexperienced and 1 that is going to be an experienced player. I think she's going with Madeline Sackström. I think she's going to pick Nana Kortz-Madsen, who's really tearing it up there, and she's really informed. I think she's going to pick, and this might be a surprise, but I think she's going to go with Gladys Bilkova from Czechoslovakia. She's really playing well during the Ladies European Tour. She's on the rise, and she has all sorts of talent. I don't think she will pick Emily Christine Pedersen. She's not in that form right now. And if she's going for experience, I think she will check and select Jody Iwochatov, who really is just shy of where Karine Kerr is, and she would go play. So to me, those are the 4. Jody Iwochatov, the veteran, and then 3 new rookies would be Madeline Sackström, Nana Kortz-Madsen, and Gladys Bilkova.
Annika definitely has the more difficult decision. Things kind of line up kind of nice for Julie Engstrom, but with 4 spots to pick, she's already got the 2 rookies. They're on, so they're not going anywhere. She's got, you know, a nice core of 6 players with Carlotta, Suzanne Pedersen, Charlie Hall, Karina Shea, Annika Norkas, and Mel Reid. You know what you're going to get with those players. So those are good players. So I do not see any way in the world, if I'm Annika Sorenstam, my first pick is Nana Kortz-Madsen. That's my first right there, okay? Now, that gives me another young player. Now, I'm looking hard at Madeline Sackström. I want to pick her, but I want her to show me something. I'm not sure if she's playing this week in the Scottish and then in the British, but I want her to show me something in one of these 2 weeks. I want her to be top 15 or, you know, be a factor or turn in some good rounds or something. She's got to show something to get on the team. She's going to want to put more veterans on there. Jody Iwochatov was not someone I had considered. You kind of threw me a curveball there. I did not have her on my list. I have Azahar Munoz because she's been a good team player, Sandra Gal, and Baylen Mozo. Emily Christine Pedersen, you know, she's the highest ranked, but she has very little experience and maybe not playing the best right now. I saw her here this week here in Toledo a little bit. Nice player. But I don't know if she's Solheim Cup caliber just yet. So, Carlos, I think this is pretty tough for her. If it was me, if I'm picking today, I'm definitely picking Madsen. I'm definitely probably picking Sandra Gal just because I know what I'm getting. The other 2 spots are open right now, and I'm leaning towards Madeline Sackström, but I really want her to show me something. And then I'm going to pick a veteran for the other spot. So whether that's Shadoff, or that's Mozo, or that's Munoz, you know, I'm not sure. But she definitely has the tougher decision.
Saying which one you said was the veteran that you for sure would take? And I got here Kortz-Madsen as your top, but then which was the other one that you would pick?
Sandra Gal.
Oh, Sandra Gal. Okay. Oh, that would be a great pick. I mean, has a great – she's a veteran. She has a good record, and she plays well there in the Solheim Cup.
I think she and Ishe would match up well, too, I think, in team matches.
Could be. My question to you would be why – I mean, I know Nana Kortz-Madsen is playing well, but it's on the Symetra Tour. It's not the LPGA Tour. No, man.
She's winning.
That's the
same. Yeah.
No. Yeah, but the Symetra Tour is not the
major. I
know. It's not.
But
she's
already
going against
she has an LET win also. So, and if she's not winning just by the skin of her teeth. She's dominating. So she's obviously ready for the LPGA Tour.
But
in the Ladies European Tour,
she's way down in the rankings. She's not there.
Yeah, but she's not been. She hasn't been playing there, though.
Well, but she's not. That's what I'm saying. And in the rankings, in the world rankings, she's not like Madeline Sackstrom is inside the top 100. Madeline
yeah.
is 16.
No, I understand.
So,
but she's Lena Kurtz Madsen right today is where Madeline Sackstrom was last year. And when we talked to Madeline, remember she said, you know, she had a little learning curve going into the LPGA Tour. She was a little bit too conservative. She had to get more comfortable. She had to get more aggressive. And she's learning that. And so I see – do you remember when they picked Charlie Hall just on the basis that she was a rookie and she had five runner-ups when she came out in the LEC?
But she was playing in the Ladies European Tour, not the Symetra Tour.
Yeah, I don't – right now, Carlos, I equate the Symetra Tour with the Ladies European Tour. To me, it's one thing. The Ladies European Tour is really down right now.
They are in a lower ranking than the Ladies European Tour. No.
Oh, I know they are officially. I'd take the top 20 on the Sumatra Tour and pit them against the Ladies European Tour top 20, and I'll bet the Sumatra Tour would beat them in a tournament.
No, not even close.
Yeah, not even close.
Not there. There's a lot more experience and better players in the Ladies European Tour. It's just not getting the same coverage that we get because we see the Symetra Tour here. We see them playing. We see what they're doing. But the Ladies European Tour has a lot of experienced players there that can play any time at the major tour, at the LPGA. So it's not the same. And that same thing, that same point that you're saying about, and I'm not, I remember, I pick Lena Kurtz Madsen to be there, but my point is,
you cannot put her
above Madeline Sackstrom because she still has that learning curve to go that the others have and that Madeline already have. That's my point.
But she's young enough.
This is the only
thing. But she's young enough and cocky enough to not even worry about that, just like Charlie Hall was back then. Just give me the ball, give me a club, let's go. That's the way Kurtz Madsen's playing right now. She's not worried about anything. She just wants to go beat somebody.
I don't know. I think she should be picked, and she will be picked. But I wouldn't pick her before Madeline Sackstrom. I think Madeline is way ahead of her right now on her journey. And Nana still has a little bit to grow and to do there. But, hey, that's why we have this. That's where you have
great discussion,
So anyway, that's our take on who should be there. In 3 weeks, we'll be talking about who finally was picked and who didn't and what we expect now that we know both teams, what they will have and what they'll bring against each other. I think it's going to be, at the end of the day, it's going to be an incredible tournament. Incredible tournament to be played is going to be. I think the Team USA should be favored. I think they have better players
They're going to be favored a lot. Yeah,
they should be, and they're playing at home. So you know, I think it's going to be a U.S. win, no matter who they pick on the other side. But I hope that it comes down to four players that are picked that really thrive in this kind of environment of the Solheim Cup, of the team environment, and bring their game up a level like Charlie did that time when she was picked, and any other that they pick. I hope that's what happens so that we can have a very competitive Solheim Cup this year. Any final words?
No, I think we covered it. That was a really good discussion. Yeah, I it's going to be interesting to see who Hanek picks for sure.
Definitely. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIGs, Marina Alex and Wendy Doolin. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, remember, if you have Roku TV, find us there. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report. The number 9 is in the middle, not the word. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy a great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
With free next day delivery from Staples, You can run your business like a pro. You can guarantee the marketing department that they'll get their supplies tomorrow and guarantee the accounting department that they'll be delivered free. With free next day delivery, you'll have the ability to move deadlines up and adjust budgets down. Go to Staples.com and get the office essentials you need delivered next day for free. Staples. It's pro time. Orders over $49.99 placed by 5 p.m. Excludes weekends and holidays. Eligible items only.
Albertsons and Tom Thumb gas rewards are now better than ever. Just shop at Albertsons and Tom Thumb to earn gas reward points. Redeem up to 20 cents off per gallon at participating Chevron or Texaco stations and up to $1 off at Tom Thumb stations. Sign up at Albertsons.com/rewards or TomThumb.com today. Already signed up? Sign into your Albertsons or Tom Thumb app. Maximum gas reward at participating Chevron or Texaco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Tom Thumb stations, up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions and exclusions apply. See complete details at Albertsons.com/rewards.